My heart beat quickly. What emotion to become perhaps the first Earthling to see in operation the engine that propelled the ship. When we entered the security zone, Commander Kramer was waiting for us. He must have entered through an alternate access way. When we entered, several alarms were activated, with a signal that went directly to the belts of the crew. They explained that the other crewmen had been warned about our presence in the propulsion area, which was also apparent at the remote control panels in other areas. Ahead of us was a window embedded in a metal wall, and in front of it were two comfortable chairs. They invited me to sit in one of the chairs and get close to the window. Wonder of wonders. In the innards of the ship, a group of three great diamonds or crystals rotated slowly around a vertical shaft extending from ceiling to floor, which turned also, in the opposite direction. The colors and shades of the shaft surface were like a kaleidoscope of pure crystal. I was truly fascinated by the gorgeous spectacle. When I removed my face from the window to ask some questions, I sensed that my features probably showed some pallor. The crewman, smiling, watched me carefully. I addressed Cyril, but the commander answered, guessing my question. Those are crystals, not diamonds. We call them memory crystals. They are programmable and receive information from the main transducer, the rotating shaft. We also call them living crystals. We obtain them on a certain planet, where they grow and reproduce. I had noticed that the crystals rotated around themselves, united to a base that also turned around the main transducer, or shaft. The crystals must have been about 70 centimeters in diameter, maybe less. I was watching the same movement as of the Earth around the Sun, but in miniature. I was breathless, but the answer to my next question left me even more flabbergasted. Commander, could you speed up the movement of the crystals, so I can see better the colors and reflections? No, Enrique, he answered, it is not possible while you are here on board. If we speed up the rotation for only 2 minutes, when you get off the ship, more than 200 Earth years will have elapsed. As you well can understand, we cannot do it. Anguish overcame me. I thought about my family, my friends, and how the planet might change in 200 years, if the extraterrestrial were telling me the truth, and all this could happen almost instantaneously. I thought, here, Einstein's relativity theories come into place. I could not stop feeling astonished. To calm me, the commander addressed me once more, my anguish centered on the possibility that someone of the crew could speed up the crystals, forgetting that I still was aboard the ship, and I could become marooned 200 years in the Frich, knowing no one, without a family, in a totally changed world. No, Enrique, that is not possible while you are here on board. I am the one who commands the ship mentally, and we have thus reduced the possibilities for error. If something should happen to me, other members of the crew have authority to carry out the mind-machine integration, where the coupling takes place directly by means of mental impulses, to the transducer and crystals program. The mental energy that we deliver is translated as flight energy. That is why we told you that we have just left. For us, the time factor is not a problem, we live in a present that modifies the future. That is why the future is malleable and cannot be predicted with certainty. Not so the past, that is already history and is unmodifiable. With their hands over their folded arms, two of them watched my reactions to the information they were giving me, so crazy sounding to my flimsy terrestrial knowledge. Inside my brain, questions stirred without answers. I was facing one of the greatest opportunities in history and could not manage to pose good questions. Because of my ignorance, perhaps I was wasting the chance to acquire great knowledge. I was the living proof that collective reactions can be fatal for our civilization, for I could not integrate within myself how they could travel at the speed of thought without suffering physical alterations. How had they solved the problem? Perhaps their bodies had some different organs, or were they a race that had achieved mastery over life and death? Later I would obtain an answer that may be the key as to how they vanquished the barrier of disease and death. But for comprehending how the mental energy referred to by the commander and Cyril was produced, I had yet to witness another sensational show. That same mental force that reached the transducer, achieved the vertiginous speed of thought. I could not recover from my astonishment. Why did they tell and teach me such things? And what was the role I played, or was about to play, in light of this avalanche of information? How were people going to believe me? Was there a preconceived plan, prior to my contact? What were their real motivations? As I wrote these lines in the year 1976, and in the 20 years since then, the panorama was, and is, still unclear. To be true, I do not know the motivations for why I was chosen for contact with the extraterrestrials. Maybe, in the course of time, when more results are obtained from research carried out by scientists in all disciplines, it will become clear not only what was the reason for my contact, but also what is the logical explanation for all encounters with intelligent citizens from outer space. While reflecting on all this aboard their ship, I was directed to climb a ladder going up to a walkway. We arrived at the Great Hall, at whose center the kaleidoscope or transducer rotated, the same that I had seen through the visor. The room appeared to be devoid of furniture or visible accoutrements. We stopped at the entrance. Cyril and Nanula escorted the commander. Gramacan arrived, and then some additional crew appeared through another entrance at the opposite side of the room. They were 12 altogether. I thought, how is the ship traveling, if the total crew is 12? 8 of the extraterrestrials wore the dull gray uniform, and the other 4, including Commander Cramier, were dressed in the reddish-brown type. Thought power of the ship, all of a sudden, before my weary eyes and already tired senses, 12 chairs emerged from the floor. They looked like dentist's chairs, located in a circle around the transducer. Then, lo and behold, from the ceiling dropped 12 helmets, similar to motorcycle helmets, which descended onto the heads of each of the crew members, as soon as they sat in the chairs. The 4 with the different uniforms sat precisely equidistant. They held hands in padlock fashion, each one holding the arm of the next, until the circle was complete. I, from my observation post, watched the scene in complete surprise. This ritual lasted perhaps 1 minute, then the helmets retracted up into the ceiling, the company stood up and released each other's hands, and the chairs collapsed into the floor. All of them returned to their normal duties, except Cramier and Cyril, who now watched me, waiting for my customary questions. They said that I had seen them liberate their mental energy to the transducer, where it would be converted into flight energy. As also told in the book A Space Woman Speaks, oversat her, with the extraterrestrials, everything was surprising. Had they performed this ritual with the sole purpose of being seen? But, what was their purpose, and to whom should I tell about it? It was obvious that they did it so that I would tell about it. But to whom? We came back to the control room. Through the observation panel, I realized that we had covered many kilometers, moving at random. My eyelids were very heavy, and I was tired. Somebody asked, "Are you sleepy, Enrique? Would you like to rest?" It was evident, and the commander ordered the others to take me some place to rest. All of them stood up, and Cyril led the way. "You are going to rest, Enrique." Nanula went with us. He didn't leave us for a second. We walked out to a straight corridor, no longer than 4 meters, and reached another room, whose door opened automatically, without using any manual control. The room was well lighted, and 4 beds appeared before us. Cyril told me to choose one, then I lay down. The bed was very soft and yielding, the surface leather-like. It conformed to the shape of my body as I shifted positions. "Sleep well, don't worry. We will wake you up." They said goodbye, and the door closed. With my hands under my cheek, sideways, and my legs folded, I dropped into a comforting and refreshing sleep. My last thought was about asking for concrete proofs of my contact, to show my family and friends. Then I knew no more. A strong pull at my brain woke me up, as if someone had touched a nerve. Upon sitting up, I saw Cyril and Nanula. "Enrique, please excuse the way we have awakened you. We have impacted your brain with a psychic order," said Nanula. "We are going to give you some final information, because the time is approaching to drop you where we picked you up." I stood up quickly, feeling as though I had slept many hours, totally rested and with renewed energies. Back in the room visited previously, the commander and another crewman were waiting for us. "We want you to remember the following: a third world war is inevitable. Men will have a 4-year grace period to attempt to attenuate it, in accordance with their behavior. Only the mental state of mankind can ease its effects. It is squarely your problem." Then they took me to the main control room, and advised me, "We are going to take a short trip, so that you can memorize the details of the place you are going to see." Through the wide window, they showed me great valleys, covered with rich vegetation, until we reached some low, flat lands. "This is what you call Los Llanos Orientales, the eastern prairies," picture up. The whole place was illuminated, as if it were daylight. "Pay attention to that road and that dirt path. Our next meeting will be right there. Memorize the location." The place was fenced with barbed wire. A battered wooden gate, ready to fall off, was the entryway to the pasture grounds. They gave me a name. I quickly memorized it. Besides recording the details of the terrain, after repeated overflights above the area. Years later, I still wondered why they selected such a remote place. "The date for next meeting will be November 18, at 8 p.m. Enrique, don't forget." With a nod, I told them that everything had been duly registered. I was sure to find the place with no trouble. "We are getting close, look." In minutes, the ship had covered the distance between the cattle farm on the lowlands and the location in the highlands where I had been picked up. The second meeting took place on the 18th of the same month as predicted, and I was gone 26 hours, and the knowledge that I gained was tremendous and very disturbing, and would completely fill a book by itself. There is much information that I cannot tell anybody, not even my friends, in this experience. I had gone to the place at the appointed time. It was in eastern Colombia. The circumstances of this meeting were a little different. I arrived 15 minutes early, by horse, with a guide whom I paid 120 pesos. He left me at the designated place but was disturbed, leaving me in the jungle alone at night. "They will pick me up here in a jeep," I said. "Ah, you are going to the ranch of the Fulanos de Tel," he said, and I answered, "Precisely. That is where I am going. But at these hours it is very dangerous here. There are tigers about." "Do not worry about me," I said, "go in peace." I paid him and he departed on his horse and left me there. The meeting did not take place at 8 o'clock in the evening as indicated, but more like 3 o'clock in the morning. I walked 50 meters in this direction, and 50 meters in that, but I did not leave the site. I kept looking at the clear and cloudless sky and waited until 3 o'clock, when suddenly 13 spacecraft of Venus types arrived. Only one small one descended and landed on three shoes. Krishnamk disembarked saying, "Brother, here." He told me to wait a minute. And then said, "Now, come on, enter." And I did as invited. Inside, there were two small beings. They were not like those of the Pleiades. They must know different races. He told me that those did not come from the Pleiades, but from Mercury, and they took me in that small craft. The small craft sat on three legs, and had a diameter of 4 to 5 meters, and was no more than 2 meters 20 high. It had 2 levels inside. We now entered through a cabin that had a metal stair, like in submarines, that went to the upper level, which was the control room. I did not see much of the ship as they transported us to a mothership almost immediately. I did not want to ask why such a long wait, though I was thinking that I could have been attacked by a snake or a tiger. If I had been bitten by one of the poisonous snakes, where could I go in the 5 minutes? I would have to do something. The same with a tiger. Then I remembered that I had not been bitten by even a mosquito, an impossibility, unless the zone was protected in some way. Then I thought that the reason for the long delay may have been a test of my patience. They did not tell me this, but I had the feeling that they had tested me to see how long my patience would last. I was happy that I had passed their test. They opened the port and lowered the ladder and we left the ship. They explained that two of the strange craft, very different from the others, with a bow structure something like a great whale were relieving of the smog and air pollution of Bogota. I saw another with a similar bow structure, and they said a ship like that was the whale that swallowed Jonah. These points of scripture kept coming up, and I thought, these extraterrestrials have certainly had contact with many of our prophets. This may lead us to a new concept of cosmic theology, as I told the Congress of Witchcraft, where mankind may become truly united with the superior entities, which we shall proudly call brothers when we ascend to that understanding, when we make contact with these intelligences en masse. They did not let me off in the same place as they had picked me up this time. They left me much closer and near the highway. I asked them why they did not make contact with more people and with governments, and they said I would have an experience that would show me one reason why they were not doing this. It was getting daylight, and must have been about 5:30 in the morning when they brought me in a small craft with the three crew members to let me off. In the farms of the plains, many people get up early to feed their animals and milk cows. The small craft made a circle over some people below. There were two men milking cows in a small shed behind a house. They saw the bright light and jumped up. The cow kicked one and also knocked over the pail of milk, and both men ran like they had seen the devil. We shot up rapidly behind some clouds where they couldn't see us. Then the farmer came out and the two men pointed up, moving their arms excitedly. A woman came out drying her hands and a child of about 8 years, and they all looked up but couldn't see anything. We were still in the cloud. Observe their reaction, said one. Yes, no need to explain, we have caused panic, but these people are farmers, I said. Now we will try an experiment with slightly different people, the ET said. And we flew to the highway where we saw a truckload of cattle approaching. We let it pass on. Behind it was a jeep which we also let pass. Then came a pickup and an automobile, very close together, 100 to 120 meters apart. We let them pass. There comes a car alone, there is no other within kilometers, the ET said. We took a position above and held that so that I could see. I could see through an electronic apparatus which they had, that inside the auto were two men with suit coats and soft ties. One was driving while the other sat at his side talking. In the rear seat another man had his collar turned up and was sleeping. The gentlemen seemed to be cultured middle-class people from their dress and the appearance of their car. We descended in front and hovered alongside of the road. They were so surprised to see us so unexpectedly that the two men in front opened their doors to exit running. The other, knowing nothing of what was taking place, fell off the seat when the driver hit the brakes. He stuck his head out of the window and yelled something, because I saw his mouth open. When he saw our craft parked above and to the side, he got out running and door, Rev Avenue, his coat trying to scramble through a barbed wire fence. That is the reaction of everyone, said my companion. Do you think that answers the question? Brothers, I said, though I know that I am with you, and this is the second time we have met, and knowing that you are living beings much advanced in evolution, there are many things which still do not understand. I hope that in time I may be able to do so. I felt very honored and considerably humbled. They continued giving me information up to the last experience in Peru. New meeting, that took place on the 25th of July 1974, when Guadalupe and Montserrat, professed spacemen, met me in Bogota. It was about 5 in the morning, and I spent 45 minutes in a spacecraft talking to them. We remained on the ground in the spacecraft and did not fly. This craft rested on 3 feet, and was of the Adamski type but much smaller. It was not very big. This craft could not have been more than 9 meters in diameter and no more than 2 meters minus 80 in height. Those spacemen that I saw then were no more than 1.5 meters tall. All of them were alike, light-colored, and looked much like those of the Pleiades but smaller. I have seen others from Orion, Otten, Yamau, Yonica, Yarica and other places. Some of them also had no women with them. In the second encounter of the 18th of November, I saw two women, and very beautiful they were, for a few minutes. And I saw at that time, on the mother craft, a very strange being. I could not tell whether it was a human or an automaton, but they permitted me to see it. When I was talking with them in the ship, an automatic port opened and one of them passed by. It had a large head like a basketball with a transparent case. I thought I could see the brains, and the veins and the organs, and the eyes were large and moved like those of an iguana, and could look on all sides. It walked like it was a robot, with a thin gray uniform and boots and gauntlets of a dark blue and some colored buttons at the waist, which was thin like a woman, which with their broad shoulders gave them a triangular aspect. The door opened, there was a light, and it entered. We all turned to look as I continued talking to them. I did not ask about it. For the first time I saw a kind of symbol, on its back, at the shoulder. Up to this time I had not seen any kind of mark or symbol. This was the first I had seen, and it was very strange. I have tried to draw the symbol since then, but I have forgotten one of the upper parts. It was a kind of an H1, but it had something else above, and I could not remember what it was. I had the feeling that they had let me see this creature, to know that such did exist. I saw also a gigantic being of 2.80 meters, whom they told me was a Jovian. He never spoke to me, and he always kept his hands crossed. He watched me with a smile the whole time and never said a single word. He seemed to understand all. A strange thing happened with my ballpoint pen. I took out my pen to sketch the solar system for a question that had come from an anonymous letter delivered to the newspaper El Tiempo of Bogotá. The writer had allegedly, angivalig, made contact with beings that looked like Hindus, who operated a flying saucer. They told him that they came from a planet similar to Earth, that it was Earth's twin and occupied the same orbit, but on the opposite side of the sun, for which we never saw it. I wanted to ask if there was such a possibility, and I took out my pen and paper to sketch the orbit and see if I could make them understand. When I produced the pen, they all displayed great curiosity, especially the Jovian. Krishnamurk told me to let him see it. He took it apart and examined it and then gave it back. I asked why the pen was of such interest, and Krishnamurk said, "It is because we have one very similar, but you must see it," and they produced one fastened by a line to the table. "Write something. Here are papers." I took the pages, which were almost transparent, and paused over them. "Write whatever you like, make a sketch." Then this happened. They asked me if I could paint the house where I lived as a child, if I could remember it, and I said yes. "But paint it, I can't even draw," I said. "Make anything." I said I painted a butterfly when I was a little boy in school, and they said do that then. So I began by pressing the point, which was finer than ours, but the moment I pressed the button the pen began to vibrate in my hand, and I heard a small sound, and felt a slight vibration. But the most surprising thing came the moment I began drawing the butterfly. It came out in relief and in exact colors. I stared, "But how is this possible?" And they laughed and explained, "Whatever you have your mind is captured and sketched exactly as you think it, in colors, and in exact scale and size. This apparatus captures exactly the vibration, the color, the size of what you think and produces it accurately. The apparatus receives the vital image and translates it then into a sketch." I was stupefied, and I then understood their interest in my pen, which looked similar. After that, on the 24th and 25th of December L974, they took me to an energy vortices in the Andes. I was Caracas attending a conference when they contacted and arranged a meeting. I boarded the spacecraft between two small villages near Caracas. One is called El Juiquito and the other, where many Germans live, is called Colonia Tiva. From there they took me to the Vortis 5 minutes. It was in the uplands of Peru, at 4,200 meters altitude, between Macayuasi and Machu Picchu. These beings have submarine bases in Lake Titicaca and under the seas. I was taken to one of the bases, the Mariana Trench. I am writing a science fiction story to be able to detail what is going on in the marine depths. By some manner I am going to give this information to the world, and I believe the time has come. Are going to make, together with others in Venezuela, kind of census of the public, of their opinions concerning flying saucers. If they accept them, We want to know why. If they do not accept them, we also want to know why. This will serve to measure the information that can be released of that which we have. Little by little we hope to give this information to the world, as much as it can accept, to prepare them for the day when they shall also experience the UFOs, hoping that they will not panic, and that they will be a little bit prepared for what will happen. One may look around and see that we have availed ourselves of little of the vast amount of knowledge and experience we could have enjoyed. Even this little was too much for many, and for most of the UFO clubs. Witness the treatment any contactee gets once he decides to reveal even a little of what is happening to him. He would be better off to have said nothing and to avail himself of these experiences in silence, which is exactly what most of them do after their first experience with the public. We may state that these experiences have gone on for years, and the descriptions and dialogue up to now would fill volumes. The undersea base in the Pacific alone would take a whole volume to describe. We have undertaken the task of translating Enrique Gastelu Rincon's full report on his contacts from the original Spanish to English for your enlightenment. Our working title for that report is UFO Contact from SHILLHO, the name which they called their home sun somewhere in what we call the Pleiades. More from this Colombian contact, about the preliminary telepathic contacts here on Link is part 2, but could be read first. Part 3, with the upcoming crisis that can lead to war and much more. Part 4, contact to Venusians, but is it live there, not in our frequency, but higher up, and more of the possible war, great demonstration of weather control from the ETs. The genetic codes and longer future life. Part 5, more on the direct physical contact to Venusians, their cosmic lessons. Part 6, from a contact in Christmas -74. Taken to a hidden base in the Andes Mountains together with other Earth contactees, where they read a message to the contactees about the Earth, future and how to help our planet. Another contact from South America, El Doco, Venezuela, during 1977 to 1979, before moving from Venezuela to Puerto Rico. Senora Monrosa Alvarado had a series of unique experiences as an observer in a local Venezuelan UFO group which was being contacted by UFO nauts who told the local contactee that they came from the Pleiades. At that time Alvarado and his wife were living near Ciudad del Doco, Distrito Marán, Venezuela in a sugarcane growing district. Reports of strange disc-shaped aerial objects were occurring almost every night. They would be seen approaching from below the crest of a small sparsely vegetated mountain above the sugarcane field, and would fly about in the sky in all directions in a random fashion. Word had gotten out about the almost nightly visits, and people from all around began coming to the area to witness the phenomenon. One night around 8 p.m. Senior Alvarado and his wife watched many different colored glowing objects of luminous disc form flying shelter over the cornfields. They were of blue, green and amber radiance and were estimated to be 15 to 20 feet in diameter. Ramon counted 25 such craft on this occasion. Some of them approached quite close, and some hovered low over the cane tops and in other places only a couple of feet above the ground. The upper level of these operations was only about 400 to 500 feet above the ground surface. On this particular night the witnesses saw a large number of shiny silver metallic balls, non-luminous but highly reflective, also flying around in the dark sky. Though these spheres were not luminous, they could nevertheless be easily seen in the light of the other disc-shaped UFOs. The balls reflected the many lights of the larger craft flying about. There may have been as many as several dozen such shiny balls only a few inches to a few feet in diameter, in several sizes. The silver balls kept moving rapidly and did not stop and hover like the luminous disc-shaped larger craft. On another night a few weeks later, Ramon and his wife joined a group of about 80 people who had come to witness the phenomena. It was a Wednesday evening, the objects seemed to be most active in midweek, and they had seen the lights below the top of the large hill. Suddenly they saw three of the blue and green 15 to 20 foot diameter glowing disc-shaped flying objects about 400 to 500 meters to the north of their position. The objects were situated, one over the river to the north near the left road, another to the right of dead center, between the two roads, and a third over the cornfield across the road to the right. As one of the witnesses started down the road to the left with a jeep, to get closer, the one to the far right began to approach up the right road. Alvarado and his wife were standing to the right and the light came slowly toward them. Suddenly a ball of white light about 1 meter in diameter burst into view in front of them and began to fly a tight vertical circle about 12 to 15 meters in diameter only a few feet away. Mrs. Alvarado fainted, bizarred, from fright. Then a much larger round glow of light came on in the distance, across the river towards the hill. It must have been huge, because all of the disc-shaped craft and the white ball of light raced toward it and went inside, and the whole thing rose and flew away as one object. Before they departed, however, the disc-shaped luminous craft on the right that was approaching up the road stopped, and an array of horizontal light beams of several colors including blue, green, violet, amber and orange came on top of the object and radiated out horizontally. Then they began to rotate like helicopter blades, in a counterclockwise direction. These light beams blinked out before this object went toward the larger light in the distance and went into it. There was a principal witness in that vicinity whom these alien visitors picked up and contacted directly. They addressed the contactee in his native Spanish, but they conversed among themselves in another language. When he asked what language it was, they called it Urdin. They said it was a Proto-Sumerian tongue used long ago on Earth by their predecessors here, and that most other languages used on Earth today were derived from it. They said that their ancestors came from what we call the Pleiades. The space being said that they lived lifespans of 1,000 to 1,200 years of our time in a single physical embodiment. They said that they lived simultaneously in the three dimensions we normally think of, plus a fourth dimension we know very little about at the present time. They said that the laws of the fourth dimension are entirely different, and that the speed of light in our dimension does not apply in the physics there. They said that they simply shift all matter up to the fourth dimensional state and the laws of time and space change. They have offered scores of detailed descriptions on very scientific subjects, including other dimensions and other beings. Senior Alvarado estimated the contact notes and dialogue he has seen amounted to several hundreds of pages. These Pleiadians, like those visiting Switzerland, also described to other planets in our solar system no familiar to us today. They called one of them Nemus and the other Sirius. These are our spellings from the phonetics used. They say that these planets will be found in orbits between what we call Neptune and Pluto.